This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C.
Welcome into the Week 5 recap show here on the Naked Bootleg Podcast, where the Patriots, Adam, go down to Tampa on a short week and get a much-needed 19-14 win over the Bucks. And the defense finally came to play, allowing just 14 points to a pretty dangerous offense. So good news there.
Yeah, I thought it wasn't a perfect effort, but I thought the defense showed enough improvement where you can point to it and say, all right, this is at least a bit of a turning point, maybe. You know, the Bucks capitalized on some of their opportunities, but, you know, the secondary was much better, I thought. You know, there were a few open guys, but it wasn't like the previous weeks where guys were just forgotten. There were guys that got beat, but you didn't see guys just sort of free running with nobody knowing where they were. I thought Gilmore played as good as he has all year, maybe his best game. I thought Chung played outstanding. I thought McCourty played great. And as far as the secondary goes, I think that's what you wanted to see is more. No communication breakdowns, no major issues, no easy touchdowns. So I thought the coverage was much better. I think that's a huge takeaway from this game.
Yeah, I think we've been harping on this for the last 4 weeks, is just don't give teams anything easy. No easy touchdowns, no easy yards. I thought they did a much better job of making the Bucks earn pretty much everything that they got in this game. The big plays were obviously a lot fewer and far between. Only one play of over 30 yards, and it was that big one to D-Jax where he really made a nice play on it, and it wasn't so much a coverage bust or anything like that. It was just a really he's fast. Is yeah. The best way to summarize that one. Devin McCourty, by the way, made a fantastic tackle on that play. It probably would have been a touchdown if he hadn't caught him from behind. And you see those wheels from McCourty every once in a while in full force. And he's just as fast as about anybody in the league these days. So much better performance. And after the game, McCourty, talking to the press, you know, basically said that they simplified things by, you know, playing to their strengths in the secondary. Gilmore on Mike Evans, Malcolm Butler on DeSean Jackson. Obviously, they mixed in some cover three and some other different looks in there, but that was basically the game plan, was to have those two guys go out and get the number one and number two, or however you want to put those two guys out there, and it worked. It worked pretty well, They played some soft zone to avoid the big plays, but overall I thought that those two guys, Gilmore and Butler, really had a bounce back game that you can kind of build on. And in the first half, they really held the Bucks to just about nothing. 123 yards of total offense the Bucks had in the first half. Jameis was 8 for 16 for 77 yards passing in the first half. Three punts, only one touchdown allowed. You know, much better performance overall. And then the second half, it got, you know, it opened up a little bit for the Bucks, but you kind of expected that this team with a lot of good skill players and a good quarterback was going to move the ball a little bit in the game. So not too bad, but, you know, you also have to remember that Nick Folk gave them 9 free points. Yeah. So, you know, it's you got to mention that. And also, you know, the one that really, the 31-yard field goal that he missed is just crazy that an NFL kicker is missing that. So, mainly the two things that, if you want to play devil's advocate here on what was a really much better performance, where it was the missed kicks and the points that cost the Bucks, and the four penalties that went for first downs, which were just absolutely, you know, killer. And Dietrich Wise, his snap count, his totals went down a lot in the second half after the dumb roughing the passer penalty, after he had the dumb hands to the face penalty earlier in the game. And so that's something to monitor, although I doubt that he's in the doghouse too bad, since they really lack his presence is pretty big at this point on that defensive line. But some really boneheaded penalties, and you hate to see Brandon Bolden jump off sides that bad the way that he did, a guy that is really on this team solely to play special teams.
Yeah, as far as the defense is concerned, they there was that one drive where Tampa scored, and they basically just ran it down the Patriots' throats.
Right.
But that didn't really materialize the rest of the game, A, because the Patriots started to play better against the run, but also B, because, you know, Tampa was sort of not in a situation where they needed to run. They sort of needed to throw. So, and as far as the field goals are concerned, you know, I sort of take away 6 instead of 9, just because I don't think that first field goal was a gimme for anyone.
Oh, and he had no chance of making it too. Yeah. Like, it was the worst kick I've ever seen. No, it wasn't that bad, but it was so far off that, yeah, that's
but,
fair.
But also it was like 56 yards. Like a lot of NFL kickers don't make that. So, but the 31 yarder and where the 48, 49 yarder, those should have been made. So, you know, and then there was the other play that the Bucks sort of left on the field was when Jackson just torched Malcolm Butler, and Winston overthrew him. I mean, that's pretty much a touchdown anywhere else if you get him the ball in stride. But but overall, like I said, you know, the defense, you'll take that performance, especially after what the last two games and the first game. I mean, I tweeted out about how the defense looked much better. I actually got some pushback from people about, well, you know, I don't think it was much better. It's more the Bucs looking bad. And I was like, well, I mean, you know, can you look at the last two games and then say that they give up 14 instead of 33 and say it's not much better? I mean,
much better.
I mean, obviously the Bucs helped them out a little bit in certain spots, but also there were some legitimate good improved, you know, performances by certain key guys out there. I mean, you know, like Chung, you know, was outstanding against Cameron Brate for most of the game. You know, McCourty was all over the place. So he might have been the best player on defense that game. You know, he there was a run stop too on, it looked like it might have been a third and one, second and one. I believe it was the third quarter where he sort of swung in from the outside and made a stop in the middle of the field on a run up the middle. And he was just all over the place. And I thought McCourty, you know, when the team is struggling on defense, they need their leaders to step up. And I thought McCourty really did that.
Yeah.
And then you look at Gilmore. I mean, Gilmore, they had him on Evans. Evans is one of the best receivers in the league. He's a matchup nightmare, and he held him relatively in check.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I don't know how you can come away from that game and not be sort of encouraged with how much better they play.
Yeah, Evans, 5 catches for 49 yards with Gilmore primarily on him the entire game. So much better performance from Stephon Gilmore. Yeah, I think that very telling after the game, the responses in the locker room about some of the media criticism about him. The players all have his back. He played a much better game, much better game plan, I thought, to just basically say, all right, we got these two really good corners. Let's just let them do what they want to do and go out there and cover these guys on an island sometimes and you know, do some other stuff. But mainly it was Butler on D-Jax and Evans on Gilmore on Evans. You can't get much simpler than that, and it worked. And I think that going forward, we've been talking about this, you know, for a while now, that going forward, that seems to be the formula, right? I mean, those two guys are as good as it gets as a tandem, I would say, in the entire NFL in terms of just overall skill between the two of them. They can go out and cover a lot of these, you know, fast receiver, big receiver combos that we see in the NFL nowadays. And I thought that it was, you know, if Gilmore had played a much, you know, more sound game in terms of communication against the Panthers, you know, he had Kelvin Benjamin a lot in that game and probably would have fared a lot better too. So, you know, it was a much better performance for them. Obviously on third down, much better performance for the defense overall. They didn't pick up a third down until the third quarter. So, you know, that's great to see. And I want to ask you about this because you talk to these guys and, you know, a lot of people, Belichick, McCourty himself, praising Dante Hightower and his leadership on the field, and also Devin McCourty's leadership on the field in terms of getting the team ready with the communication improving and all that stuff this week. And McCourty actually credited Kyle Van Noy as well as being a leader in the huddle and a leader on the field and getting everybody on the same page. So those three guys, and I think Patrick Chung, I agree, who was out there for every snap on defense and played a much better game as well, really stepped up and were able to, you know, be the professionals on this defense, so to speak, and get everybody in the right spots and clean things up back there.
Yeah, I think all that leadership stuff really matters. That it gets played up a lot, so some people might think it's not. You know, so it might be a cliche to some people, but I think it really does matter when it, you know, especially when a team hits the amount of adversity that the Patriots hit on defense when they've been playing so poorly, and they hear about it and, you know, they know it by how they play when they watch film. And, you know, I don't think people in the media were overselling it at all. There was just bad play, and Harmon said that last night. He was like,
"Yeah,
you're right." But I mean, it's one of those deals where, you know, there's guys on that field who are in that locker room who just don't, you know, won't stand for a certain level of play. That there's a standard that that they've set for themselves, and when they fall below it, they'll do. They'll do everything in their power to turn it around. And so I feel like they sort of forced themselves to play as good as this, as they're capable. They weren't going to allow another performance like that. Now, again, was it perfect? No. I mean, there are points left on the board by Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay sort of helped their cause a little bit but, you know, Winston missed a bunch of throws. And stuff like that, but you could see the effort. You know, you could see the intensity on the defense. There wasn't a lack of awareness. There wasn't a lack of effort. It was, you knew that the defense was playing with a sort of level of desperation almost to turn things around. And so, you know, it's not a surprise to me that somebody like McCourty had one of his best games. Because that's sort of the role you have to take is when you're one of the best players and one of the best leaders. When the rest of the team is struggling, you have to sort of pull them out of it. I think that's
right. You know, and McCourty said it after the game that, you know, they knew that they had their backs against the wall. They knew how bad they were playing, and they also know, you know, maybe not for him personally, but for other guys, that if you don't start playing better, then the Patriots are going to find other guys that are going to play better. You know, that's just the way that the NFL works. And this team, more than any other team, maybe in all sports, responds to adversity and poor play better than I can think of any other team. You know, back against the wall, so to speak. I understand it was 2-2. They weren't 0-4 or anything like that. But, you know, back against the wall, relatively speaking, for their standards, and they come out in a short week, on the road, deliver a really sound defensive performance. And Jameis, you know, he gave them some favors for sure, but I think coming into the game, we talked about it, you know, on Wednesday, that we kind of knew that Jameis wasn't going to come in here and be Peyton Manning. You know, he kind of knew that he would miss some throws and give you some chances to intercept some throws, and that's kind of what happened. And, you know, Harmon dropped an interception, and they had a few chances at a couple of others. But the throws that he did miss, you know, the one of D-Jax was the big one that he should have hit, no question. But some of the other ones that he missed were tighter window throws that you would kind of expect an inaccurate quarterback at this stage to miss. So that was, you know, those are the throws that you kind of give to offenses and you say, okay, if you can make this happen, then, you know, good on you. It just didn't happen for the Bucs. And I thought that, you know, the leadership really with Hightower and McCourty back on the field for Hightower being back out there and playing a lot more this week, it's definitely not overblown in my opinion. I think that's 100% a huge factor about getting, you know, he's the vocal leader of this defense, Dante Hightower. When he's on the field, you know, people listen, people hear his voice and people listen, and he definitely might not impact the game as much as you want in the box score, you know, all the time. You know, a lot of people allude to, you know, he doesn't have a big 10 sack season or 100 tackle season or something like that. But it's so much more than that for him than just accumulating stats. And it was just a much better performance all around, I thought. And I think that the secondary, all of a sudden, you know, we talked about it. The talent is there, and when they put together a performance like this against a pretty good passing offense, I mean, they did give up 300 yards again to Jameis. They've now given up 300-plus passing yards five straight games, which is an NFL record. So that's not great. But now that they, you know, we kind of see it more, I think that the secondary has a chance to be pretty good, and I think we've always thought that. And now all of a sudden, it maybe we are going to get that over the last, you know, 12 games or so of the season here.
You know, maybe I'm off because I haven't gotten a chance to watch the game again. But it seemed to me that there was a good amount of off coverage in the fourth quarter, that some of those yards they sort of let them have. I don't know.
Especially the D-Jax one. I mean, they were backed up against the goal line, so I get it. But, yeah, the giving him that much cushion was probably not a great idea.
I was surprised how far off. I was looking at it. I was like, is he really that far off? So, I mean, yeah, they gave up a lot of yards, but some of it I'm like, well, they allowed them to have a lot of those yards.
Right.
There was a lot of off coverage there in that fourth quarter where I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe if they're more aggressive, it's a 19-7 game, you know.
Right.
And we're not talking about this the same way. But yeah, I mean, like, look, if you have Stephon Gilmore, you know, against a guy like Mike Evans, and Evans only has five catches for 49 yards?
Yeah, five for 49. I mean,
that's a huge step forward. That's a huge step forward. I mean, Evans is as good as any receiver in this league in terms of his physical makeup and his way and his ability to go up and catch the ball. Jackson and Winston haven't been on the same page that much, but you know, they did a good job against those two. And, you know, the thing that stuck out to me the most was how well Chung played against Brate in some of those situations. Now, towards the end of the game again, Brate made some better catches, but it's not like Chung was getting lost on him or, you know, was getting beat down the field.
No, the touchdown that he scored was good coverage.
Good
catch.
You know, I mean, you'll take that. I mean, you'll take what the secondary gave you. And also another thing I'd sort of like to point out is on some of those plays where the secondary made big plays, Winston had a lot of time, and they covered for a long time. It's not like Winston was under constant pressure. I mean, he was able to sit back there and scan the field for a while. So That makes some of those coverages even more impressive in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. The Patriots, just from an X's and O's standpoint, quickly they played a lot of cover three in this game, and they have throughout the entire season a lot of cover three bail. Belichick alluded to it in his press conference, just saying that they let some outs go, some out routes down the sideline, which is tough to stop against cover three. You're, you know, obviously focused on staying over the top of the guy, and he cuts it outside or inside. Those are tough routes to stop in that coverage. But overall, that I think that it's a really good coverage strategy, because it you can put either Harmon or McCourty in the middle of the cover three, and then Patrick Chung can go and get the tight end or a running back out of the backfield in the box, and you really cover everything at the back end. And Stephon Gilmore is a tough guy. If he's got the number one, he's a tough guy to throw over, you know, and especially when he's not getting beat, you know, by having to turn his hips in man coverage, and he can kind of just already, you know, get upfield. It's going to be really difficult to get big plays on him. He's a big guy, and it's difficult to throw over him. So I think that, you know, that's a really nice strategy. Obviously, they need to clean up some of the routes that bring players back to the quarterback or stop routes and stuff like that on outs and ins. But overall, I think that that's kind of the coverage that we're seeing, either bump and run man or cover three bail. And both of those are kind of the coverages that the Patriots are going with this season with Gilmore now in the fold. So I thought that to see that work pretty consistently was really good news. And one other thing, and then we'll move over to the offensive side of the ball. But the trade deadline, I thought it was earlier than it is, but it's Halloween this year, October 31st. And it kind of feels like a trade for a player, either a linebacker or an edge player, has to be coming at some point here. They're playing Cassius Marsh a lot, and I'm not a fan of that personally. He played 50 snaps last night, way too many, in my opinion, for the level of player that he is. And you kind of feel like, in years past, Belichick has always, you know, kind of identified the weakness of the team and tried to at least add somebody into the mix around the trade deadline. If they were to add a decent enough edge player or a defensive lineman that can really come in here and do some stuff, all of a sudden this defense might, you know, turn a corner. I think it would be a big boost if they could add somebody in the front seven at the deadline.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I'm not sure who that player would be or
right.
who they would deal away. But if they could add one more sort of pass rusher, that would really help, because that's still the area that I look at and say, all right, well, you can't really expect them to be consistent there right now. It's just not there on a consistent – you can't lean on it when you sort of need it. I still feel like Wise, even though he made those penalties, is somebody that, you know, can be a good pass rusher, and Flowers still I like, but, you know, outside of that, where is that coming from? Where's that pass rush coming from? So, are they going to blitz more, or are they just going to try to find somebody? I think it would be useful to bring somebody in. I don't know who that person is, but sometimes they strike gold with a midseason acquisition, and I think that would be something.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you gotta think that that's gonna happen. Obviously, it's not gonna be Von Miller. It's gonna be somebody that's no one. You might not even know the guy's name when you hear the name, but in the past, that it's just that little bit of depth or that little bit of of a boost to kind of add to the guys that they already have has gone a long way, and you kind of see it correct itself, once they add somebody like that. It's pretty – I thought the secondary is really turned a corner as a group and came together as a group after this Carolina game. I think they knew how lousy they played. I think they knew that there was a standard that they had to hold themselves to, and they really picked it up. And they didn't – they played without Eric Rowe in this game too, which I think is a little bit they didn't have quite the depth that they normally have at corner either. So, to do it without Rowe and to play a game like that, on a short week, pretty good stuff. But moving over to the offensive side of the ball, where Tom Brady turned the ball over twice, uncharacteristically bad interception on the first drive of the game. But when you look at the final totals, even though they only scored 19 points, you know, they still moved the ball pretty easily when, you know, throughout this game, I would say.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway for me for the offense was the running game. I thought that, even though they didn't give him the ball a lot, I thought Deion Lewis was outstanding. I thought Gillislee ran very well. So I think, you know, that's important, even though they only scored 19 points, that they said, okay, we're going to commit to the run either a little bit and have some success. So I thought that was important for them. You know, I think the offensive line is a big issue right now. Like Romo on the telecast was talking about how he thought that Solder looks hurt, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, because he's not playing up to what he usually is. You know, the sacks are a real issue. They were throwing out the stat last night that Brady's already been sacked more this year than he was last year, which is alarming. You know, not to harp on it, but the guy's 40 years old. You know, you know, taking hits like that over and over, that's not sustainable throughout the course of the season. You know, you really don't want that. So, I mean, you don't want it for any quarterback, really. But I mean, I think that's the biggest issue right now with the offense is protecting Brady, because he was under a lot of duress, and it said he was only hit six times. There's sort of only six quarterback hits. It felt like a lot more than that, and it also felt like a lot of times he got rid of the ball just a second before it looked like he was going to get annihilated.
Yeah.
So, it was it was scary looking at Brady back there. You know, just every other drop back looking like he was going to get hit. So, there's something that has to improve along that offensive line for that offense to feel good about itself, I think.
Yeah, I wrote about it last week, and it kind of, you know, continued the trend this week with the struggles on the offensive line and pass protection. And Nate Solder especially had another pretty poor game, but both tackles, Cannon, you know, both of those guys are not playing up to their usual level right now. And we always kind of knew that the interior offensive line wasn't the best in pass protection. David Andrews, Shaq Mason, not really their specialties. And, you know, you really need those tackles to play better. And against guys like Robert Ayers and Noah Spence, who's a young, talented pass rusher, but still hasn't really figured it out in the NFL. I mean, Tampa Bay coming into this game had one sack.
Right.
The entire season.
Yeah.
And they had three and a bunch of quarterback hits and a bunch of really close, you know, sacks, as you alluded to, that Brady just, you know, got rid of the ball right before he was about to get hit. So that's not great. The running game, I think that there's this, like, kind of this MO in, among Patriots fans that they need to run the ball more. And I'm kind of more in the camp of they need to run it effectively.
Right.
You know, it needs to be a threat for play action. It needs to be a efficient go-to secondary option. You have Tom Brady, so you're not going to run the ball 40 times.
Right.
I mean, maybe if the game plan calls for it, or if you get up a lot in the game, I suppose that you might see them run it more. But they're not going to run it. They're not going to be a team that's a 50-50 split running the football. They've never been that. I went back and looked at last night at 2007, 2011, last season even, 2014, some of the better offensive years for the Patriots. They've always been pretty close to a 60-40 run pass split in those seasons, really since Brady, you know, became Brady, you know, after basically, you know, 2002, 2003, 2004 range, somewhere in there where Brady all of a sudden, you know, took that next step, and you know, a lot of things were on his shoulders going forward. They've really been a 60-40 team. So really what it's about is running it effectively. Last night, they absolutely ran it effectively, 4.9 yards per carry. Deion Lewis, obviously, we've been pounding the table for him to get more carries, and he did last night. We'd like to see that continue, I would say. And really it's a matter of making it good secondary option in terms of efficiency and then situational. You know, we talked about this also, running in short yardage, goal line, all that stuff. If the run game can do that, then that's what you want. That's what you're asking for out of it. You're not asking to be the Tennessee Titans or the Dallas Cowboys here and run all over people. And then that plays into it, you know, that adds to the play-action game where Brady is so dangerous and they have a lot of speed on the outside where this play-action game can really turn into something. But overall, I mean, they only scored 19 points, but they drove into Tampa Bay territory six times. And I thought that we really saw, you know, the impact of Gronk when the field started to shrink. Who's the mismatch? You know, who are you going to in those situations? You know, it's a lot to ask for this offense to score a lot of points. You know, obviously Edelman's not coming back. And then you lose Gronk, and now you're out Edelman and Gronk. You know, it's a lot to ask for this offense to continue to put up 30 points without those two guys in the lineup. So, you know, that's really, I thought, what happened here was, you know, when the field started to shrink, they really just had no place to go with the football. That was a matchup, you know, issue for Tampa. Not to say that some of the other guys like Chris Hogan and Danny Amendola didn't step up in this game without Gronk, because they absolutely did. But it just, it gets harder when you can't, you know, scheme it and you can't use speed with Cooks and stuff like that to get wide open. You know, in the red zone and stuff. So I think that was kind of why they were held to 19 points, and along with, you know, the two turnovers, obviously, will hurt you too. But when you look at the stats, I mean, the Patriots offense, even without Edelman, is on pace to put up some ridiculous statistical numbers. Tom Brady is on pace right now to throw 5,442 passing yards, I think it is, or 43. He's right on the cusp of Peyton Manning's single-season record. If he has a big 500-yard game thrown into the mix here and he continues to throw for that 300 to 340 range in all the other games, he's going to have a chance at Peyton's record for a single season. The Patriots are going to have a chance to have four 1,000-yard receivers if everybody stays healthy, and maybe a fifth at 750 if James White continues to play the way that he is. So the even without Edelman, and I'm saying this because a lot of people on Twitter keep telling me, oh, we don't have Edelman, we don't have Edelman. Edelman's not coming back. He tore his ACL. He's on the IR. He's not walking through that door. Like he's out. And even with that, Tom Brady is still on pace to throw for 5,000 yards in the air. It's crazy. Go ahead.
It's also kind of crazy considering you've got nothing out of Dwayne Allen.
Right. Not even a catch through five games.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing where, you know, last night, if you have a Martellus Bennett there and not a Dwayne Allen, that problem in the red zone isn't as bad. But Dwayne Allen's giving you nothing, and it's one of those deals where at this point you think, I don't know, is Brady even going to throw to him much anymore? Yeah, probably not, you know? There's not much, it's one of the more disappointing signings you can have. But again, I think, you know, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that after losing Edelman for the rest of the year that the offense would still be putting up these types of numbers, even though they only scored 19 last night, I wouldn't have believed you. I mean, like four 1,000-yard receivers, that's crazy.
Yeah, it'd be the first team in NFL history to do that. Hogan is at about, I think, got it right here, 921 pace right now. So he would have to have a few big games thrown in there, 100-yard games, to get over 1,000 at his current paces. But the other guys, I mean, Gronk and Cooks are going to go well over 1,000 if they're healthy for the entire season. And Danny Amendola right now is on pace for a 1,000-yard season, which is, you know, what you might have expected without Edelman. But I don't know if we think that he can stay healthy for long, you know, for enough games here to necessarily do it. But if he can, I mean, man, he's been out lights out, unbelievable. Danny Amendola, maybe not as explosive with the ball in his hands as Jules, but I mean, he's every bit as good as a route runner, I would say. You know, in terms of those option routes and the picking up the first downs, which is really, I mean, he's 65% of his catches right now are going for first downs. You know, that's an incredible stat. He's as money as it gets, and he never drops the ball.
Yeah.
And he made some ridiculous catches. He had one that was called back for OPI, which I thought was BS. You know, in that game he pushed off a little bit, but I mean, it wasn't a lot. And that was pretty big. And you know, he's just been, can't praise that guy enough. You know, been awesome. And I think Patriots fans have given him a little bit of flack for his injuries in the past, not being on the field. But man, when he's out there, he's as good as they've had in the slot, I would say, right up there, with some of the other guys, just hasn't stayed healthy enough to put together, you know, the big gaudy stats that a guy like Welker or Julian Edelman have. But, you know, in terms of effectiveness when he's out there, just as good. And, you know, in terms of how they replaced, you know, the Gronk snaps or played without Gronk, you know, a lot more four wide receiver sets, I think. You know, I kind of expected that. I figured that they would probably do that versus, you know, go heavy. But I want to look at the numbers. Pro Football Focus should have these today or tomorrow about how many times Dwayne Allen stayed in the block versus how many routes he ran. Felt like he was blocking on every play.
Yeah.
And they've just completely given up almost on him as a receiver. At the moment, at least. A lot of mouths to feed is obviously part of it, but he has 6 targets through 5 games and no catches. So I think that he is basically in here now as a blocking tight end, and that's pretty much it. And you know what? Maybe that's good in some respects, because the offensive line is going to continue to pass protect like this. Maybe you see him stay in and as kind of a 6th lineman almost, that is at least a little bit of a pass catching threat, so it's not like Cameron Fleming is out there or something like that. And you know, maybe that's the way that they go, but a lot more snaps for Danny Amendola last night, as you'd expect. A lot more snaps for Philip Dorsett last night, even though he didn't really get on the stat sheet, he was out there a lot more. So that's kind of how they made it work with Gronkowski out of the lineup. And you know, they still put up a lot of yards. Brady still threw for over 300. The running game was pretty good. They just didn't get on the scoreboard the way that you'd like to see.
Right. Yeah, I think I totally agree with the Allen thing. If he stays in as an extra blocker, they could really use that. And, you know, I thought there were some positives with the offense. They obviously need Gronkowski back, though. That's, you know, that's one extra guy too much. That they can't lose.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, other than that drop, I thought Cooks played really well. They used him well, I thought, in terms of, you know, just that one play where he sort of crossed the field and Brady sort of dropped it in the
bucket. What a throw.
That was a great throw. And, you know, I think Cooks is sort of more comfortable in the offense now. And, you know, Hogan and Amendola, you know what you're going to get from them. So combined with a much more efficient running game, I think there, again, there are a lot of positives. But, you know, I didn't come into this game thinking the offense was in trouble one way or the other. But, you know, this, you know, what they showed, even though they only scored 19 points, was sort of enough in my view. That's, you know, they're still, I still don't have any real doubts about the offense. And you know, and you can be encouraged by what you saw from the defense.
Right. I think that the pass that to Cooks on the cross, deep crosser, which is just a dime by Brady, was a really good sign in terms of their where they are in their connection. You know, Brady worked back to him in his progression. Cooks kept alive, stayed alive, and continued his route across the field. And Brady came back to him and hit him. And I thought that in terms of chemistry between those two, that was a really good sign. That they're on the same page like that, and no, neither one of them is just giving up on the other, you know, early in the down when it's not initially there, the initial read isn't there. So I thought that was a good sign. That's something that you see guys that have played a lot together kind of do. You're late in the down, you know, find each other like that. Chris Hogan, you can't speak about, you know, he spoke a lot of high praise about Danny Amendola, but Chris Hogan also, I mean, just a reliable, good receiver. You know, really reliable guy that's always out there, always catches the ball, gets open pretty consistently for a guy that you wouldn't expect to get open that consistently. Red zone threat this year, believe it or not. You know, career high touchdowns already. Is on pace for 16 TDs this year, which is absurd.
Yeah.
So I think that some of those touchdowns that we thought maybe that were going to Brandon Cooks ended up actually going to Chris Hogan in certain situations. So that you know, that might be part of the reason why Cooks is only on pace for about 6 TDs right now. And, you know, those two guys, Amendola and Hogan, are as reliable as it gets. And Cooks is obviously, you know, the more talented receiver, but Hogan has played the most snaps. He's up there, and I think he's number one in targets on the team. And you know, is really not the number one in terms of talent, but in terms of just availability and how much they're using him, he's hasn't missed a snap on offense in a couple games now. So he's, you know, he's kind of the guy outside of Cooks right now. So you know, really good player. Glad that they got him in here and kind of figured that secret out in Buffalo the way that they did. Because 2 years in now, just as good as you can expect. But let's wrap it up on this. I wanted to question the hoodie just a little bit here with you, see what you have to say to me, whether I'm wrong for questioning the greatest coach of all time. But the pooch punt almost came back and kind of haunted them in this game.
Instead of kicking the field goal, you think?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a long field goal. It would have been about a, you know, 50-yarder, roughly. But Gostkowski has been killing it all season. He's had a great bounce-back year, I think, so far. And they pooch punted. They did, you know, pin him back. But then Tampa drove all the way down the field and scored their second touchdown on the following drive. And it really made it a game by not getting points on that drive. If you kick the field goal, obviously you're risking the field position battle. But if you make it, it's an 8-point game, much, much different game, I think, down the stretch there. And we're not all having a heart attack in the final seconds as Jameis is trying to drive for the win. And then the week before, you know, not calling timeouts against Carolina, I understood that. Maybe a little bit more than the pooch punt. His explanation was pretty good. You know, didn't want to give Cam more bites at the apple to get more yards and make that a shorter kick. Right. So that one I kind of understood because the defense wasn't stopping anybody on, you know, Sunday. So to give Cam a few less opportunities to move the ball. I mean, who knows? If they call timeouts and they give him an extra play or two there, they might have scored a touchdown on that final drive instead of just getting a field goal. So that one I kind of understood more. But the pooch punt, it ended up working in terms of field position because Ryan Allen had a nice punt and then Slater pinned them. But, you know, it was risky. It not going for the points there I thought was risky.
Yeah, I thought it was risky. I think it was basically, to me, just a show of confidence in the defense.
Yeah.
That it wasn't going to, give up too much. After that, it ended up almost backfiring. But in that respect, in the respect that, you know, hey, I'm going to show confidence in the defense and they're playing a good game. Let's see if they can close it out for us. In that respect, I can see where he's coming from.
Right.
If Gostkowski misses a field goal from that length, that gives Tampa Bay the ball in pretty good field position.
Yeah.
So that could have backfired on him too. So I mean, you can second guess it. I guess there's no real easy answer for something like that. But in the end, it didn't end up killing him. But I can see why he chose to do that. You know,
Yeah, you can see the logic, and you can always see the logic with his decisions. You know, it's not like he's making, you know, Andy Reid type decisions in terms of clock management where you're just like, what the hell's going on?
Right.
You know, I think the idea was obviously to give him a long field, the field position, trust the defense. And really, Tony Romo said this on the telecast, you know, they didn't think that Tampa could score twice on the defense the way that the game was going. They knew that they were up two scores, and the likelihood of Tampa scoring twice on the defense and driving the whole field twice was slim. So I understood that and ended up working. But it all gave us a heart attack at the end there, because if they kick that field goal and he makes it, you know, they're up 8 instead of 5, and it's a very different ending to that game.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more, you know, a lot harder for the Bucks to come back at that point. But, you know, they won, and that is all that really matters. And obviously, I think that this was just a huge bounce back for the defense overall. But what do you got coming down the line here?
Since there's not a lot of since there wasn't a Sunday game and it was a Thursday night game, I don't have a Sunday feature coming out this week. So I'm gonna you know, be until next week that I have something more coming out in the Herald. You know, I'll be doing some Monday stuff, but there's not going to be access on Monday. They emailed out, so we'll see what happens then. So, not sure yet what the following week is going to hold, but you know, we'll see. I mean, they're playing the Jets. It's going to be interesting because the Jets are off to a better start than sort of anyone expected, even though, you know.
I think this is we'll see what the Jets do on Sunday. I really need to do a better job at knowing who these teams are playing. But the Jets are playing the Browns. So they have I knew it was somebody bad.
Well, I mean, the Jets could very well come into this game 3-2.
Yeah.
And you'd still sort of feel like this isn't really the challenge of the game, but
I kind of feel like that Jets game is, not to cut you off, but I feel like that's one of those games where we kind of figure out that the Jets actually still suck.
Yeah.
And maybe the Patriots blow them out the door on that one.
What about you?
I got the snap counts, if that's your thing, up this morning. So that's up right now. Advanced stats report will come up hopefully later today if I can get my act together. And then the Herald, in terms of the Herald, probably not till next week now also for me, next Wednesday most likely. But, I think that's all I got coming down. Probably do a film review again, maybe do some stuff about Dante Hightower moving back into the middle. I think that's going to be a big factor in this defense if they can get some more snaps out of guys like Dietrich Wise and I guess Cassius March to, you know, move Hightower around a little bit more. I think that will present some more pass rush opportunities for them as well. But, long layoff here, which is kind of nice. A quick turnaround and then a long layoff. And the Patriots got the Jets next week. And what are the odds that I turn on this Red Sox game right now and they're already down like 10-0? I think it's pretty high. I don't like to get distracted, so I didn't put it on in the background. And I have a really bad feeling that I'm going to turn this game on and it's already going to be over, you know, in like the third inning. But I hope not. I hope not. But man, you know, I think we all expected the Red Sox to probably not get too far in the playoffs based on the up and down swings that they've had this year. But game one was as bad of a playoff game as you can expect, especially with you know, your ace on the mound like that. That was rough. But let's hope that doesn't happen. And then, you know, Bruins back, Celtics back. It's a good time to be a Boston sports fan right now. Overall.
A lot of stuff.
So, all right. So we'll be back. Adam and I will be back some point next week to preview the Jets week. I love Jets week. So we'll preview the Jets. The Jets could be coming in here. Same record as the Patriots, 3-2, believe it or not. So we'll get to that next week. But thanks for listening. And for Adam Kirchin and Evan Lazar, we'll be back next week.